Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
The True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
If you'd like to skip the intro, please refer to the timestamp listed in the episode description. Thank you.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. We are back recording at a semi-current time. It is May 8th, 2024 right now. As you know, we batch recorded a couple episodes because Olivia had her big trip to Hawaii. Yay. And we're back now. She is back where she belongs, temporarily, I guess. Yeah, she's already got big plans coming.
It's so weird because, like, even I said, so we left, I don't know, because there's a time difference too, but it's so weird to me that in the space of 24 hours, you can be on the other side of the world, then all of a sudden you're home and it's like nothing, you've never left.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We've been home since Monday. It's now Thursday here. Feels like, honestly, it was already a long time ago, back into work straight away the next day, school and everything. So it was an amazing place, had a great time, amazing weather. Highly recommend if you can ever get there. Yeah, just a beautiful place. It was a great holiday. We had a great time. Did a lot of swimming, snorkeling, sunning. So yeah, beautiful.
What was
relaxing
your favorite part?
I love snorkeling. So we did a snorkeling trip out on a boat where we went. It was actually quite wavy and windy that day. So I thankfully bought seasickness tablets for our family because there was a lot of seasick people on the boat. But it was really cool that we went. The guides were really cool. They were like, come over here, there's a turtle, and we saw a seal and things like that. So it was, and they had off the boat, they had a water, like a rubber, big rubber water slide and a trampoline and stuff like that. So that was probably my highlight. But I do love snorkeling, and I especially love it when it's not too deep, because I like the deep ocean is very scary. So when it's not that deep, I really enjoy it. And this was perfect. So yeah.
What was your least favorite part?
Probably the plane ride home. Well, we just spoke about it more on Patreon, but basically we had a very angry drunk passenger. I thought, because the whole flight from Hawaii to Australia is basically over the ocean, so I thought we might have to make a stop in Fiji or somewhere random for this guy to get off and be arrested. And he was just cranky and drunk, and the kids were freaking out, and it was like what you see on the news. But anyway, in the end he calmed down and it was fine at the end. But it was just one of those things where you're on a plane with, and it was a totally full flight, like I didn't even see one spare seat. So it was just, you're on a plane stuck with this disgusting feral person. But anyway, that was fine. In the end, it ended up being fine. We're all safe. We got home. So
what a dick. Like, I know he was wasted, which is already annoying, but like, imagine having the confidence just piss off an entire fucking plane of people.
And he was older. Like, I would say he would have been in his 60s probably. And he was with his wife, and his wife didn't say a word the whole time. And I said to my husband, I said, if you ever acted like that, I would find a lawyer on the plane. I'd find a lawyer on that plane and do it right there, because that is so, like, he was just gross, like abusive to the people working on the plane, abusive to the people around him. It was just horrible. Like, and imagine being that entitled and thinking it's all right to treat people like that, you know?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Gross.
Anyway, I
don't
know.
You're like, I would pay for the Wi-Fi just to find a lawyer to get divorced immediately.
I probably, like, there was, on this plane there was no Wi-Fi, but yeah, I know. I said I cannot, and I felt sorry for his wife because I could tell that she was embarrassed and probably
used to it.
Yeah,
but she deals with
this
all the time. Yeah, like, this cannot be the first time.
But anyway, it was just gross. If you like, and I was saying, I've been on so many flights in my life, and never, ever, ever have I ever experienced anything like this. It was like what you see on the news, and the guy was disgusting. And when we got off the flight, because we were like literally sitting across from this guy. So when we got off the flight, the flight attendants, when we're walking out, they're like, I'm so sorry. And we're like, no, it's not, you know, it's not your
problem.
You're
like, no, I'm sorry for you.
They were like, they did their best to handle it. And in the end, they de-escalated the situation because they stopped serving him alcohol and basically didn't.
He tired himself out like a whiny baby.
Pretty much. So, yeah, that was the only low light, I would say.
Yeah.
What's been happening with you?
Well, speaking of whiny babies, my sister, I think I talked about on here that she was pregnant. She had her baby. He arrived 2.5 weeks early, so it was a big surprise, a big drama, whirlwind. Happened very fast because she ended up having to get like an emergency C-section and all that. But in the end, all was well. Everyone is fine. Everyone is healthy. And there is a new little baby in our family who is very cute and like the smallest. I haven't been around like a newborn baby for so long because all of my cousins are in their teens at least. So it's just like you forget how small they are. Like you could hold this little baby with like just like your one forearm basically like holding him and he's so light. He's so cute.
You forget like the how perfect tiny little they face. Are.
So tiny. It's like you forget that they're just the smallest little nuggets.
You're an aunt now, so that's exciting.
Yes, everyone's very excited. So I've been hanging out over there a lot. We said he had perfect timing to push his way into the world because we had that week off where I didn't have a podcast to edit. And he just knew that it was a good time so that I'd have time to meet him and hang out and hold him.
Very convenient baby.
Yeah, but also like very inconvenient at the same time. But I guess he picked the best time to be inconvenient.
Yeah.
I told him, I was like, I don't know why we're in such a rush to get here because it sucks in the real world. And now that he's like opened his eyes more and is a little more active, because the first few days it was like he was always sleeping. And then I got to see him more awake and alert and moving around a little. And he always makes this like grimace, like suspicious grandpa face that we laugh at. And I was like, see, I told you it's not that great here. I see you grimacing.
Should have listened to me, mate.
Yeah. I was like, you could have had 2 more weeks in a nice little snuggly tummy. And here you are. But we're happy. It was nice to not have to wait the extra weeks, even though it was chaotic for a little. So it was very unexpected that it was like, oh, he's coming today. He's coming immediately. but yeah, all's well in the end, so.
That's good. Perfect outcome.
I'm now an aunt, and I have another human being to spend money on because baby stuff is so cute, and I just want to buy all of it. That is that. That's really all that's going on with me. Still waiting for my kitchen renovation. All that. That's it. I mean, Peep is here in my lap. She is sleeping. So maybe we'll hear from her. I know it's been a while. I was finishing editing the Springfield 3 episode last day. And as soon as I got my computer, Peep was so excited, immediately came running over to help edit, aka to just rub on the computer, to try to sit on the keyboard, try to sit on my face and just generally be in the way and a general hindrance to doing anything. But she's ready. She's back in action.
She's been refreshed and ready to go.
Yes. And speaking of Springfield 3 episode, we have to thank.
Mackenzie.
We have someone to thank for suggesting it.
I think we did say in the episode that we have had a lot of people suggesting it, but Mackenzie did send us a message in April, I believe it was. You guys should cover this. And so we just wanted to give her a specific shout out because she probably re-prompted us to look into doing it again.
Yeah. So thank you for saying that one. It is an interesting one. It's one of those ones you kind of forget about, but I was like rethinking about like what could have happened while I was editing it and finding all the clips and some interviews. It's just crazy they still haven't found them. I guess not at the same time because it seems like the whole crime scene was contaminated and they had nothing to go off of, really. Mm-hmm.
Not looked after. But yeah, I always, like, I know I've spoken about it in the past. I feel like these days, and I know that's an older case, but these days there are very few things that actually remain a mystery. Like, you know, now with DNA advancements and technological advancements, but just the fact that 3 people can have been missing for over 30 years is mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, next, I think June will be 32 years. I said in that the title just 32 years because it's close enough. And what am I going to do? Say 31.7 years. Like, so, yeah.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
We do have a couple updates to talk about, one being Richard Allen.
It's kind of a non-surprising update. I said to you, I am surprised, but I'm also not surprised.
Yeah, and that's like the best way to describe it, because we expected it to happen, but it's still just like, are you fucking kidding me at the same time?
The only thing that is surprising for me is they got so close, and we're getting ahead of ourselves, but right, basically the Delphi trial has been pushed out again, which we kind of always thought it would be, but it got like within days of the start date and they've now pushed it out.
Yeah, so again, Richard Allen, he is the man who has been charged with the murders of Libby and Abby from Delphi, a case that we have always followed. So it has been delayed until mid-October now. It was originally supposed to start May 13th, which as of right now is in a few days.
Yeah. And it was only pushed out this week, like in the last few days. So literally less than a week before the trial was meant to start. Yeah.
And it's funny because I messaged you, I think, the night before this came out, and I was like, Delphi trial is supposed to start May 13th. We'll see, LOL.
And in all the posts I made, because there have been a few things, like there was a new mugshot and stuff released, and I'm like, the trial will apparently start on May 13th, because I just had a feeling it wouldn't.
Yeah, and there's a lot of legal, technical drama going on with this case that it's honestly all over my head, which is another reason why we don't totally get into it. If you do want to read more about it, I've always said Defense Diaries on, I think he has a podcast, but his Twitter or X account is Defense Diaries. He's a defense lawyer. He's always posting about all of the legal stuff that's going on behind the scenes and all the different papers and documents that come out and explaining them. So if you are interested in learning about that stuff, he's a great source. And he also like retweets other people who are good sources for that. So I could try to remember to post them too if you want to know more about it. But there was all the drama with the defense attorneys got dropped and then they fought for their way back on. And then they were trying to get the judge to recuse herself from it, and it's like they're blaming, there's a lot of drama with ISP and the main investigators basically saying they lied about stuff. Again, I don't know what's actually true and what's not, but this is another reason why I knew it was going to be delayed again, because there's been so much just like back and forth, I don't know another word besides drama and arguing between all the lawyers and the judge.
Yeah.
But again, as some people have said in reviews, like, they don't know anything about the legal process. I mean, I do about the general legal process. I did work at a law firm, but this stuff is like more deep than like the basic knowledge.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to comment on it, and I will direct you to people who know what they're talking about. Anyways, so the defense attorneys said that they want to vacate a May 13th trial because they didn't have enough time to get ready for the trial, basically.
I just don't understand it. I like, and I know people be like, you're dumb, why don't you understand? But how can they get to a week before and say, sorry, we haven't had enough time? This has been going on for years and years and years.
Like, well, I think they've been saying that, and now
maybe
I think
it just came to the crunch or something like that, and they're like, no, we actually aren't ready.
And I think with them like getting removed and then all the other drama going on, and now people are being like accused of lying or like lying about witness statements, like the police were leading witnesses and things like that. I feel like it just turned to such a mess, and that there's so much. And I'm sure they just want more time in general.
Yeah.
Of course they want to push it out, but basically say the defense is now saying that they need more time to like get their case together. And I think they were also saying that they didn't feel like whatever the span was that they were given to present the case wasn't enough time. So they're arguing for like a longer time.
I still wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't happen in October. Like, I will be surprised if it ever goes to trial, I think.
Yeah, with the way everything's happening, I wouldn't be surprised if the whole thing, like, got thrown out or something, which would be horrible. So let's hope that doesn't happen. But it just seems like a legit circus, like a circus.
We have had a lot of questions when the trial was meant to start anyway. We had a lot of questions from people saying, will it be televised? The judge has banned
cameras,
all electronic devices, like, so nothing can be recorded.
Makes me side-eye the judge even more. Like, even the reporters, like, they're not allowed to bring in any electronic devices.
Yeah.
So even just, like, taking notes.
I wonder why. Like, I just...
Because it's sketchy. Everything is going on is sketchy with this case.
Even in the Idaho murder case where the judge has his own YouTube channel. And then in this one, they're like, nothing. You can't have anything. Like, even if they just had one court-appointed reporter or something, I don't even know. But anyway, so the answer to that is no, it will not be televised unless they change the ruling. But for now, the judge has banned everything.
Yeah, which nowadays is just so strange. Like, I know obviously there's going to be transcripts and stuff, and maybe people can request them after and the reporters can do their write-ups after, but it's still just like, really? I get that this case is a circus, like I said, but I feel like that makes it even more of a circus because people are just going to speculate further now.
Exactly. Anyway, so we'll keep you posted, but yeah, not happening in May as was scheduled.
Yeah, so the new trial dates are October 14th through November 15th right now in Carroll County. There'll be 3 days of pretrial evidence hearing on May 21st through May 23rd in Carroll County. But yeah, so that's really it. Again, we'll keep an eye on it. But like I said, if you want to learn more about what is going on, check out the defense diaries and any of the counts that he reposts.
We do also have Delphi highlights on our Instagram where we've saved a lot of the articles about this. So if you want to go and have a read through of what's happened to date, you can check it out.
And we have a couple past episodes explaining like the story so far, I guess, and everything that's come out, like the main story, the main crime, everything that came out when Richard Allen was arrested, and then the whole Odinism document release. We have episodes on all that too if you want to learn more about the case, because it is a case we know a lot about, the actual case.
Yeah.
But just the legal stuff gets a little confusing.
Convoluted, and especially just because it is, like you said, a circus. It just goes on and there's changes.
Everyone is pointing fingers at everyone.
There's been like a suicide because someone leaked information. It's just, it's a mess. It's a big mess.
Yeah. So that is that update. We also have an update on Suzanne Morphew.
Yeah, which is actually quite timely because this is coming out. This episode will be out just after Mother's Day. Susan went missing on Mother's Day in May 2020 in Colorado. So we've done an episode on her in the past. Her remains were found in September 2023, so 3 years after she went missing. She and her husband, Barry Morphew, had been having some marital issues at the time she disappeared. Over the years, Barry was arrested and charged with first-degree murder in the case. However, all charges against him have been dropped for now. They were dropped a little while ago. Prosecutors chose to dismiss without prejudice against him, which means that they can file the charges again at a later date. So as we mentioned, her remains were found in September 2023. Just now her autopsy has come back. The CBI released this statement that says, the agencies investigating the Suzanne Morphew case are aware the autopsy report is now complete and determined her death to be homicide by undetermined means in the setting of butorphanol, azapirone, and metotidamine. I don't know. I've screwed that up.
Metotomidine.
And those three are abbreviated to BAM, BAM intoxication.
So I guess it's something that you could buy mixed all together is what it seems like when they say BAM, right?
Yeah. The Colorado Bureau of Investigation and our law enforcement partners understand and appreciate the public interest surrounding this case. The investigative team assembled to work this case continues to follow the evidence and only the evidence as we seek justice for Suzanne's death. So we posted the whole autopsy, which is only 3 pages because essentially she was bones by the stage that they found her. One thing I did find sad is that it noted that her medical port was found amongst the remains because she was undergoing treatment for cancer at the time that she was murdered.
It said she was in remission but was still going to like some routine chemotherapy, I guess, just to maintain.
So like it turns on that it says 3 large paper bags containing bones, 7 brown bags containing clothing, and 7 envelopes of other stuff. So anyway, basically the autopsy doesn't give that much information. It just goes into the remains that were found and how she died. In terms of BAM, which is what we'll just refer to it as to make it easier, it says in the autopsy, these drugs are marketed as a compounded injectable chemical immobilizer for wildlife, providing pharmacologically reversible analgesia, sedation, and immobilization. So basically, in layman's terms, it's an animal tranquilizer. Only licensed veterinarians can prescribe it. There is some information from a 2021 affidavit where Barry admitted that he frequently used BAM and other tranquilizers to sedate deer. According to the document, he said he used it to sedate deer and remove their antlers to slay in the hunting business, which I don't even know. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, it is a thing. People definitely
take their horns.
I don't know about like the means of it, but people definitely do like look for them and get them and
that's crazy.
Do stuff with them, make decor. I don't know.
I just thought that that would kill the animal, like taking part of their...
No, because they shed their antlers.
Oh, right. So when detectives told Barry that a tranquilizer dart had been fired in or around the house, he revealed he would often shoot the deer from inside the house. He told detectives, "I've shot deer from that little breezeway from between the garage and the laundry room out the back door. If there was a tranq dart out there or outside or in the house, it's me shooting deer," he told detectives. So during a search of the property, which happened just after Suzanne disappeared on May 19th, 2020, investigators found empty darts, a dart package, and a dart needle. The affidavit detailed multiple interrogations specifically about a needle cap that had been found in the laundry room in the dryer amongst other washed sheets. There was also some chat at the time, or, you know, discussion that when Barry got to the house that day, he'd put his phone on flight mode, but it still showed that he was kind of chasing something around the house and he was talking about chipmunks. Like, there's this whole weird side, you know, discussion to this, but basically it seems like he was probably trying, allegedly probably trying to tranquilize Susan to do whatever he did to her. I don't know how I I think our episode was titled about this. It's always the husband, allegedly. So we always knew it was probably going to be.
I think it was Jennifer Doulos.
Yeah.
Was it Jennifer Doulos and Suzanne Murphy in one episode?
I didn't probably, like, if that was her actual cause of death, I am maybe surprised by that. Like, I thought maybe he might have done, like, tranquilized her and done something else, but they're saying that is how she passed away, which I'm also surprised they could tell just by bones. I guess what's left in the bones is how they.
Yeah, sometimes there's like tissue or like the bone marrow that you can test.
So at the time of recording, nothing else has happened against Barry. I suspect maybe it'll just be a matter of time, hopefully. But yeah, it's just an interesting update, which I am shocked and glad that they could get from the remains that they found.
Yeah, I think it just points the finger at Barry even more, because like, one, this is something that has to be prescribed. Like, it's not something that's easy to get, that just anyone can buy. But he already admitted to
having it in the house.
Yeah, had tranquilizer darts, had all that stuff. I don't know. I think it just really narrows down the options of suspects to just him, basically. But we'll see. We'll see.
So the most recent kind of article after the autopsy results is that there was a private memorial held for Suzanne in Indiana, and Barry apparently snuck in and went there even though it was invite only. So still doing the most. But
I just feel bad for his daughters, because they've been – their daughters, they've been supporting him through all of this, and I just can't imagine how they feel right now. I feel like they're just trying to like grasp on to like the one thing that they have left. Yep. And I totally understand doing that. Like, you don't want to face
not having any parents left.
And just like the emotions and the trauma of like, your dad probably murdered your mom and you've been supporting him, and because that's all you have left, and just not wanting to face that. So I definitely don't blame them. And I hope that people can give them like some grace after all of this. Again, Barry, as of right now, is innocent. This is just our opinion. So.
I would be surprised if something doesn't happen now, especially considering the cause of death is so specific and can be traced back to likely Barry. I'd be surprised if something doesn't happen, but hopefully they're just all getting their ducks in a row and something will happen soon.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about some cases of mothers who are murderers. So trigger warning, this does have to do with child death and things like that. If you are more sensitive to that, or that's not something that you, not that anyone likes hearing about it, but if that's something that is going to really upset you, just take this as a warning that that is what this episode is about.
Yeah. So we're going to discuss two main cases today, and there's a third one that isn't really a crime, but I wanted to discuss it anyway. But what the first case we're going to discuss is about Australian woman Jasmine Thomas, who killed her two daughters, Carolyn and Evelyn, in a car fire in 2022. And the other one that we're going to discuss is a very recent one from Texas, where a mother named Savannah Krieger killed her son during a kind of custody dispute with her husband. She killed him on the day that there was meant to be a custody hearing, and there's a whole bunch of really messed up things that she did beforehand. So we're going to discuss those. And then there's also been a recent case in Ohio where a mother took her own life at the daughter's university graduation in front of hundreds and hundreds of people. So it's not a crime as such, but it just shows you that sometimes, you know, and I feel like we always kind of joke, you know, it's always the husband, it's always the man, but there are cases where mothers do truly heinous things, either in front of their children or to their children. And, you know, that is sadly what we're going to talk about today.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
So first we're going to talk about Australian mother Jasmine Thomas. She killed herself and her two daughters, Carolyn and Evelyn, in a car fire on March 4th, 2022.
A Toyota Corolla explodes into flames parked in a driveway off the Western Port Highway. Neighbours heard a loud explosion from kilometres away.
Lots of flashing lights. I couldn't see the glow, just the smoke and lots of lights, red and blue lights.
The blaze spread to a nearby paddock but was quickly extinguished. Firefighters assuming the car was abandoned but then made the tragic discovery. The bodies of three people, a woman in her 30s and two young girls believed to be 5 and 3, inside the burnt out wreckage.
Very sad that's a mother and two children under the age of 6.
Police are calling on anyone who was travelling along the busy Western Port Highway last night to provide footage of the woman's final moments before the vehicle pulled into this gravel driveway. Arson squad detectives are in charge of the investigation. The cause of the fire is not yet known, but police say they're not looking for anyone else.
So a coronial inquest took place recently, which is kind of why this is back
in the news.
Even though it happened in 2022. So the inquest took place recently, and Jasmine's husband, James Swan Palacamanal, gave some more evidence then. So Jasmine and James had met on an arranged marriage website, and they were married in India in 2012. Jasmine worked in Melbourne hospitals as a nurse, but unexpectedly resigned from Mulgrave Private Hospital in 2021. But she stayed as a casual employee at Dandenong Hospital. She also attended the Lifespring Pentecostal Church in Cranbourne East, Melbourne. So during this time, she told her family that she was having marriage problems. Carolyn was 3 years old at the time that she died. She was born in 2018. And Evelyn was 6, and she was born in 2016. So James recalled how the Gulf War inspired him to teach Evelyn to be a good person. He said, "I watched her take her first steps, say her first words. I'd give her pep talks before bedtime about famine and the war and how kids go hungry, about global warming and climate change, to put a desire in her heart to be a force for change." So Jasmine suffered from postnatal depression and became paranoid during the pandemic. She contacted a number of professional services, including police, in an effort to get help. Jasmine spoke with her doctor in June 2021 and said that she was feeling low and wasn't sleeping. She was assessed as suffering from mild depression and was prescribed Cipramil, which is an antidepressant. She was also given melatonin to treat her insomnia, which I think is crazy because melatonin, for me personally, doesn't do shit. Yes. And I don't have insomnia.
Especially for like someone saying that you're going to a doctor and you're not sleeping and they're like, "I'll just take some melatonin." Like, I don't know. I guess.
And she's like clearly struggling.
Yeah. I am surprised they didn't prescribe like a sleeping pill to her, but.
And lack of sleep can, especially if you're already suffering, lack of sleep can just take that to a whole nother level. Like not sleeping really, really, really messes with your head.
Yeah.
So in October that year, she went back to the doctor to say that the medication wasn't working, and she was referred to a psychologist for further treatment. Jasmine had a telehealth appointment with a psychologist, and she denied having any suicidal thoughts. She told the psychologist that she was stressed about work and that she and James had been arguing a lot. A follow-up appointment was scheduled for January 31st, 2022, but Jasmine didn't keep the appointment. There was one incident of violence at the home, which was reported to police on September 29th, 2021. James called police after he had an argument with Jasmine. He told them that Jasmine had become aggressive and was causing damage to appliances and clothing in the home. The children were in the home at the time. By the time police arrived, Jasmine had left. James spoke with police and said that he did not support any criminal action being taken against her, and he signed a statement of no complaint. Basically, he didn't press charges against her.
Yeah.
Police attempted to contact Jasmine after that, but they were unsuccessful. They applied to the magistrate court for an intervention order to protect James and the children. And on November 8th, 2021, Jasmine attended the Dandenong police station and was interviewed. Around this time, Jasmine told Child Protection that her husband was making her look crazy. She also said that James threatened to call police anytime that she got angry because he knows she will, quote, get in trouble. Also around this time, Jasmine told her doctor that James was verbally abusive. She was referred to Relationships Australia for support as she told the doctor that she couldn't afford a lawyer. James apparently told Jasmine that he could track her anytime she left their home, and he had her iPhone login. It was said at times that James would force her onto the bed in the room. It would not let her leave the home if she was angry and screaming due to the shame it would bring on the family. On November 18th, 2021, an interim intervention order was granted by the Dandenong Magistrates Court, which included conditions that Jasmine could not have any contact with James, Evelyn, and Carolyn, and that she could not attend the family home. Jasmine was worried that the intervention order might affect her work and that she might lose custody of the children. Jasmine was worried that the intervention order might affect her work and that she might lose custody of the children. She didn't have an alternate accommodation and spent some nights sleeping in her car. At other times, she would stay at the family home, even though Jasmine and James both knew it was against the conditions of the order. No further incidents were reported to police, and James stated that it was peaceful between them after the September incident.
I'm shocked that, just to interject for a minute, that this one incident brought all this, the damage that she did to the house or the appliances must have been quite a lot, because it feels like this is a very extreme outcome for one violent incident. The police were never called to the house any other time. There must have been a lot for it to come to that after one incident, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know here, usually when if a complaint is filed, it seems like the police, because this kind of what happened in my situation. I had an order of protection against a girl that was harassing me, but I didn't press charges against her or anything. I didn't want to be involved in it because I just wanted it to go away, and I was young and just didn't know what to do really. But I didn't press charges against her, but the police and the district attorney took that and went and did it on their own anyways. So it seems like that's similar to what happened here, where she still, even though James didn't push for it, she still broke the law and it still had to be dealt with.
Yeah.
So I think that this, it was like she got they get the temporary one until they can hear the actual circumstances and deal with it. So it seems like it just took a while for the actual hearing to go through.
This was COVID time, 2020, true. 2021. So things were probably a bit slower.
Yeah. So it seems like that just took a while for the actual hearing to take place, which is what happens next. So on February 23rd, 2022, the intervention order application was heard at the Dandenong Magistrates Court. James asked the court to remove the exclusion conditions so that he and Jasmine could live together. A final intervention order was issued with the condition that Jasmine must not commit family violence against James, Evelyn, or Carolyn, or intentionally damage any of their property. The order was issued for a period of 12 months. James stated that once the intervention order was varied, Jasmine was happier. I love how it's so coroner John Kane would say at the inquest, despite Child Protection and Victoria Police holding concerns about her mental health as she was not assessed as acutely unwell and did not wish to engage in services. She did not receive any formal assistance or diagnosis. On the night of March 24th, 2022, James got home to the family home in Lyndhurst in Victoria around 6:30 p.m. He said he found the kids playing with a phone and his wife, Jasmine, she was laying in bed. James said he was annoyed about this because he didn't like the kids to be playing on the phone. He later said that he called Jasmine before he got home and suggested that they all go outside to do something as the weather was nice. So basically, he was on his way home, called Jasmine, was like, why don't you bring the kids like outside? It's nice out. And then got home, they're playing on the phone and she was in bed not paying attention to them. And that annoyed him is what it seems like. When he did get home, Jasmine said she was not ready and told him that she needed to lay down for a bit longer. Shortly after this, Jasmine told him that she was going to take the girls to McDonald's. She loaded them into the family vehicle, but instead of going to get food, she took them to a gas station and she purchased a jerry can or just like, you know, like a gas can and filled it with gas or petrol. She purchased 6.9 liters of petrol. After that, she did take the kids to McDonald's. They went through the drive-thru and ordered their food. After Jasmine got the food, she drove and parked in the street outside of McDonald's. She could be seen passing food to the girls and also looking at her phone. They sat in the car there until around 7:30 p.m. 10 minutes later, she drove them to a remote spot on the Western Port Highway. She doused the vehicle with the petrol and set it on fire with herself and the kids inside. A passerby reported the fire and emergency services rushed to the scene. Leading firefighter Richard McKay stated that on arrival at the fire, he saw a car that was fully engulfed in fire and a grass fire was burning away from the car towards the north. It was brought under control in 15 minutes. All three were declared dead at the scene. Jasmine was found dead in the front seat and the two girls were in the back seat.
There's a photo of the car and it is like destroyed. It's basically just a shell of the car. All the glass is gone. It's literally like what you would expect a burned out car to be. Like it's not just a small amount of fire. The car is destroyed. Mm-hmm. So at the inquest, an expert named John Kelleher gave testimony. Mr. Kelleher holds a Bachelor of Applied Science and a Bachelor of Arts. He's also a member of the Royal Australian Chemical Institute and a chartered chemist. He's a member of the Australian Institute of Physics and is employed by the Victoria Police Forensic Services Centre. So those kind of credentials just enforce that he basically knows what he's talking about. He conducted an extensive and thorough examination of the vehicle to determine the mechanism and the cause of the fire. He concluded that the cause of the fire was the ignition of combustible material in the passenger compartment, such as seat covers, seat padding, trim or clothing, assisted by the presence of petrol. A child seat and possibly a booster seat would have increased the amount of combustible material present. He said there was evidence of a significant explosion which caused structural damage to the vehicle. The windows remained intact but were bent outwards. The door skins were partially blown off and the frame was distorted. There was a relatively low level of petrol detected in the rear of the vehicle and the fuel-air mixture in the rear may have been lean, which would tend to cause more explosion damage. He said the two children were very severely burnt and higher levels of petrol were detected in the front passenger footwell and the highest level was detected on the driver's seat base cover and padding. So that basically indicates that she poured the petrol on herself and on the driver's seat and lit it on fire and it all kind of went from there. Mm-hmm. He said that Jasmine was also very severely burnt and that basically, as we mentioned, the majority of the fuel was in and around her. The driver was seated correctly in the driver's seat with her seatbelt undone, but with her door closed and locked. He also said there was a small amount of melted red plastic found on the passenger seat, and this may have been the remains of the fuel container, but the amount was so small that it couldn't be confirmed. That just gives you kind of an indication of the ferocity of the fire that burned this jerry can to basically nothing.
Yeah.
He said there were also low levels of petrol detected in the material on the rear seat. It wasn't clear, though, whether or not Jasmine had poured petrol in the area or if it had just spread as a result of the firefighting.
Car fires are scary. Like, they're big, aggressive fires.
It's so weird. I don't even know. We were on the freeway, like, recently in the last few weeks, and it was pouring rain, and all of a sudden we just drove past this car, and it was fully on fire. It was just, like, random. It was just such a random thing. But, yeah, they can happen so quickly.
Yeah, and they get bad really fast.
Yeah. So the source of the ignition wasn't determined. They said matches might not have survived the fire, so I guess it could have been a match, and a cigarette lighter may have been embedded in the debris. They said that there is also the chance that the electronic equipment in the car, such as possible ignition sources, may have been the cause of the fire. James told police, though, they did have a green cigarette lighter that was usually kept in a drawer in their kitchen, but he couldn't find it after the fire. So that kind of implies that maybe she took it with her to start the fire with the petrol. Mm-hmm. So James told the coroner's court about memories of his family. He spoke about how Carolyn would drag a chair to reach the front door handle and open it as he arrived home from work each day. He said she would always be wearing her favorite color, which was pink. He said that Evelyn was the boss of the house, and he said she wore the pants. To see the coffin go down with all of your favorite people in it changes your life. I will never be the same again, never get to touch, feel, or to see them again. They will remain pictures on a screen. He said, on March 24, the sky became 3 stars richer. Suddenly, there is no one waiting for me at the door. I'm now living in an empty and silent house. He said, my wife, Jasmine, tried her best. I wish she had sought help. She struggled to connect and engage with people and make friends. When she couldn't anymore, in the process, she took out my most prized possessions. So it feels like there was a lot of toxicity maybe in their marriage, you know, a lot of arguing. Jasmine was obviously struggling, and it just was a perfect storm of horrible circumstances that led her to make this decision to do this to her and her children.
Yeah, and it's just hard to know like what's even true, because if she was mentally ill, like it's just so hard to have an opinion on these cases. Because there's so much that you don't know, and it's almost like it's all out of context to us outsiders, obviously. But it's like, yeah, maybe they were fighting a lot. Is James a terrible, abusive husband? We don't know. I guess he could be. But then it's like, if she was this mentally ill, that could have also been prompting these fights where he's like trying to deal with her having this untreated mental illness or going through the things that she was going through, and that sparked their arguments, where it's like hearing that some of the things that she was saying makes him seem like a horrible person, abusive, toxic, but like could the mental illness be kind of like the core of all the problems? Like was he trying to get her help or trying to protect the kids, and that's what resulted in them arguing? Maybe. Could he be abusive jerk? Maybe.
It does sound like he was probably, I don't know, obviously, and obviously we can only go off what we know from the inquest.
Which is just like the little sliver of...
Yeah, of that, what actually happened. And, you know, like I haven't seen any of her, he said that she didn't have any friends and she found it hard to make friends. I haven't seen anything from people who knew Jasmine, you know, come out and say she was a great mother or anything like that. So maybe...
And no one's come out that we've seen that said like he was an abusive, toxic, gross piece of shit either, so...
And even in the coronial inquest document, so the point for anyone who's not familiar with how it works is sometimes in Australia if there's a death that there could have been changes made to prevent the death. So in this case it could have been maybe, you know, different mental health services for Jasmine, you know, different things like that, even different safety measures for a car, for example, that could be implemented to stop something like this happening. But basically they said that everyone had done the right thing and that she just chose not to take the treatment. Like the treatment was offered to her, she didn't take it. And you can't do much else than that if, you know, what else can you do? If you're offering it to someone and they're not taking advantage of it, that's their prerogative, I guess.
Yeah. And it seems like James did still care about her to a sense, where I don't think it was like he just hated her and wanted her to go away, because he didn't press charges against her and he did like amend the order so that she was allowed to like be around them. And even when the order before was amended, he let her stay at the house so she wasn't sleeping in her car. So, I mean, that shows that he did still at least care about her well-being to some extent.
Yeah.
It's just, it's weird with these cases because sometimes like it's just like my gut instinct on how to feel with them. Like this one, I really don't know how to feel. Like I do feel sympathetic towards her to an extent because it seems like in the beginning she was trying to get help and that help didn't really work out for her. Like they gave her melatonin and something and then it didn't work. And then maybe she started feeling kind of hopeless and just felt like no one could help her. But it did seem like she tried to get help at the start.
And I do feel like too, we have forgotten a little bit about the pandemic. Like obviously we know what happened, but mm-hmm. I feel like when you're in the thick of it, it was a lot. And so then to be dealing with all these plus the pandemic, you know, it's just like it would have been a lot. And I feel like sometimes now that we're a few years on, we forget the stress levels that some people endure. And I'm not making excuses for her. She absolutely did the wrong thing and made the wrong decision. But I just feel like it would have exacerbated the situation endlessly.
Yeah, I guess this is why these cases are so hard to talk about and kind of just like drop, like no one in the media, I feel like, really wants to talk about these besides the initial incident because they're so nuanced. Like with Lindsay Clancy, I think hearing her story, a lot of people felt more sympathetic to her because it seemed like she really was trying to get help and was trying to deal with it. And her husband still was really supporting her. So it did seem just kind of like this freak psychosis episode. But then in the last one, we talked about, what was her name? The one who set the house on fire.
Birdie Prusner, yeah.
Where that one seemed like much more calculated, where clearly I think she was also suffering with some mental illness, but I don't think it was like psychosis. And that was seemed much more calculated on her part. But this one, there's just not like enough information to really feel either way. Clearly she was struggling, but...
And I like, it's interesting that he said she felt better after the intervention order was modified. And this was only happened a month after that. So.
Well, it seems like she, like whatever was happening was coming like in waves. Like yeah. She'd be okay. Then she like violently destroyed the house. Then things were better for a while. And then this happened. So.
It's, yeah.
It sucks that she just couldn't get better treatment early on, or at least something that gave her more hope to keep trying to get the exact treatment she needed, and it left her feeling hopeless, I'd imagine.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
So the second case, murder case we're going to discuss today is a very recent one. It's from March 2024.
Cell phone data cracks the case of a murdered child, according to the Bexar County Sheriff's Office. It started in a southeast neighborhood on March 19th. That's where investigators say just after 1, Savannah Krieger stopped by her ex-husband's house while he was at work.
And damaged various items of personal clothing, furniture items.
Sheriff Javier Salazar says Savannah then drove to her own home in Alamo Ranch.
We know is that there were some wedding dresses that seemed to have been laid out. We believe that there were that she fired 2 shots into her wedding portraits.
After that, surveillance video shows Savannah picking up her son Caden from daycare at about 2:30, detectives say. At 3:19, Salazar says Savannah sent one last text message to her ex that read, "Say goodbye to your son." On her phone, they reportedly found a 21-second recording.
She and Caden appear to be already seated at the drainage ditch where their bodies would eventually be found. Savannah instructs Caden to say bye to daddy.
Salazar says a handgun was found next to their bodies.
On the 18th of March at around 1 p.m., Texas woman Savannah Krieger, who was 32, left her job and she went to the home of her ex-husband Brian Krieger. The couple had a son together, Caden, who was 3. Brian had filed for divorce from Savannah on March 7. So this all happened in a pretty quick amount of time. Obviously, they were having marriage issues before this, but in terms of divorce was March 7 and this happened March 18th, so very, very soon after he filed. When she got to the home at around 1:15, Savannah went inside and damaged items of clothing, furniture, and other miscellaneous belongings. Phone tracking would later confirm that Brian was at work at the time, and so she left the home at 1:24, so she was there for just under 10 minutes. There had been a custody hearing scheduled for the same day. After Savannah damaged Brian's belongings, she left and went to her own home. She arrived there at 1:57 p.m. It's believed that she laid out her wedding dresses on her bed and she shot bullets through her wedding portraits. She left her home at 2:18 p.m. and she drove to Caden's daycare. She arrived there at 2:32 p.m. and she loaded Caden into the car and they left at 2:42 p.m. So just a few minutes later at 2:46, she FaceTimed Brian and told him, "You don't have anything to go home to now, you really don't, and you won't have anything at all at the end of the day. You left us for a piece of ass. Daddy left us for some woman he met on the internet. Explain to your son why you're not here." So Caden was in the backseat of the vehicle during this call. When he asked why she vandalized objects in his home, Savannah replied that he cared more about his material possessions than his son. Brian recorded this call using another phone, and afterwards, I guess he was worried about what she'd done. So he rushed to his own home and he said that, quote, every article of clothing that he owned had been destroyed. Police arrived at his home at 3:37 p.m. Brian then made a criminal mischief report. He has spoken to the media and he said, "She sent the message on the tail end of a wire transferring all the money out of our joint account. I assumed that she was running with him, and that's what prompted my lawyer to initiate the order for writ to make her appear in court the next day." So there's actually screenshots of the texts that Savannah sent him. Like there's a bank account screenshot. She said, "I don't care anymore. In case you don't get the message, you don't get to have my son at all. Say goodbye to your son." So that's kind of what we've mentioned before. Brian told Fox News, "What was going through my head was that I needed to get my son out of her custody as quickly as possible because of her erratic behavior after seeing the damages. The only thing the Bexar County Sheriff's Office did was a welfare check at her residence, which was stupid because I told her that she wasn't there and she had my son and she had intentions to take everything from me." So Savannah then drove Caden to the Thomas Slick Park in San Antonio. She attempted to FaceTime Brian again. I don't think he answered though. So she sent him a message saying, "It's another one, saying, say goodbye to your son." She tried again a few minutes later to call Brian and he didn't pick up. She recorded a video at 3:21 p.m. from the drainage ditch where she and Caden were. She said to Caden, "Say goodbye to daddy," which he did. She then kissed Caden and apologized that his father, quote, can't be there with him. Savannah's phone records show that she looked up children's cartoons at 3:29 p.m. and that is basically when they assume that Caden was murdered. An Amber Alert was raised for Caden the following day, but he was already dead. They found his body and Savannah's body in the drainage ditch that day. The Bexar County Medical Examiner's Office confirmed that Savannah died by suicide. Caden's death was ruled a homicide. The medical examiner said he died from a gunshot to the head. I just can't even imagine that poor child. You know, hopefully he didn't know what was happening. It was, maybe it was quick, hopefully, but just very, very, very sad.
Like back to what I was saying before about how just some you have more sympathy for than others. This one, I have no sympathy for this woman. I don't think she really had like a mental illness or postpartum depression. I think this was all just like impulsive rage directed at her husband, wanting to get back at him for maybe cheating or whatever she'd mentioned. Like, I don't think she was in psychosis. Everything seemed really calculated and really brazen and really awful. And I think, I mean, say I'm victim blaming, but I think she's trash human.
Yeah. And like, you know, I suspect there probably was some adultery maybe by the husband, like just based on reading between the lines. But even then, for her to go and do the wedding dresses and the bullets through the portraits, the whole thing is very exaggerated.
Seems like she had an anger problem.
Yeah. And dramatic. And, you know, I really feel that this was, she'd planned to do it that day. She knew exactly what she was doing. I don't know how long, maybe she only planned it for a day or two. But
yeah, I don't think it was like a long-term plan.
No, when she found out that he was going to have the custody hearing, she just thought, well, basically fuck you, and went for it.
Yeah, like I think she knew exactly what she was doing and just wanted to get back at him and
take everything from him. Yeah.
Caden was just collateral damage, unfortunately.
I remember at the time when this was all happening and they found the bodies, it was kind of insinuated at that time that it may have been a double murder, but it was obviously quickly discovered that she was the one. I wonder why she did it in a drainage ditch. Like, that seems weird to me. They weren't with the car. I wonder why she didn't just stay in the car. But anyway, a very strange, manic situation.
Maybe she wanted there to be a chance that that it would look like a double murder, yeah, maybe, by being in a ditch, and that he would get blamed for it. Maybe like a little bit of a Gone Girl thing.
Yeah.
Which, wouldn't surprise me if that was the way she was thinking with all the other things that she did.
Even if she, and I wonder if she didn't do it for that reason, but then she's like, say goodbye to your son. So it was all very, like, just, it just seems like a mess, a big, messy situation where she just basically wanted to hurt her husband as much as she could.
Yeah. It's sad because I'm already worried about what I said, just because having an opinion on a podcast, everyone has opinions about your opinion. And if people are going to say, like, I'm victim blaming, she could have been suffering. Yeah, she could have been, but I still think that what she did was just so messed up and brazen that sometimes, like, we can't walk on eggshells and we have to just, like, say it the way it is.
People
what she did
have to be responsible for their own behavior, horrible, and their own choices. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we can't always be like, oh no, like, she was a victim too. Like, how sad. Mm. Yes, sometimes that is absolutely the case, but sometimes it's not. And that shouldn't be an excuse for the people where it's not.
And it's not, it would never be an excuse for a crime like that. You know, it might be an excuse for destroying the husband's, you know, even then, that's just belongings. Things can be replaced. You know, you can understand maybe in a fit of rage that someone would do something like that, but what the extent that she went to is unforgivable.
Yeah, agreed.
So just as a last, I guess, another example of a mother doing something horrific, it's not a crime as such, but we've had so much discussion about it on all our social media, so I just wanted to mention it quickly. Just this last weekend, a woman died after she fell from the Ohio Stadium during Ohio State's university spring commencement. So people were saying, well, this is horrible. She fell. It's a really kind of steep stadium with really steep stairs, but it turns out that she actually jumped. The woman who jumped from, she jumped, so she climbed over the stadium seats in a very high area of the stadium to the bell tower, where she then jumped from the bell tower. The woman is Larissa Brady. She was from Woodstock, Georgia. Her daughter was there at the commencement ceremony. Some information from dispatch.com, it says that Larissa's daughter was receiving a bachelor's degree during the ceremony. Larissa spoke to her daughter as she entered the stadium for commencement. Larissa then went into the stadium with her husband and 12-year-old son to sit and watch the ceremony. Once she was seated, Larissa told her family that she wanted to move higher into the stadium, and her family told investigators that they lost sight of her. She made her way to the last row of benches, and witnesses saw her climb over the concrete wall, according to the coroner's office. She had been sitting in section C30 near the bell tower. So I've seen some photos. It's literally like the absolute nosebleed section where she was. She went to the highest point that she could before she climbed over the wall and essentially jumped. And everyone, like, I just can't even imagine. Imagine the poor daughter, like, looking at the end for a mum, like, she knew her mother was there. You know, you have your ceremony and you go and find them at the end. And I have read that she actually walked past the police tape and didn't realize that it was her mother who had been involved in the suicide or the incident.
Yeah, it's wild.
Larissa's family have said that she had mental health issues. She'd attempted suicide in the past and that she hadn't been taking her medication. But I just think, my gosh, that poor daughter. Imagine, and even the poor people around it who saw it happen. What a horrible, horrible, horrible thing to experience.
Everyone there, like, it was supposed to be basically like a highlight of someone's life so far. Yeah. Like, graduating is a big deal.
And
it's supposed to be
sure
all about you and your accomplishments.
Was like, pre-med. Like, so she's a very successful young woman.
And she probably worked really hard to get to where she is. And
exactly.
Her moment has to now be like, tarnished, and the memory and feeling proud is tarnished by her mother's suicide at literally her graduation ceremony. And I'm sure she feels embarrassed in a way, because, like, it was such a public thing and everyone's probably talking about them. It just turns such a highlight of her life into such, like, an absolute, what's the opposite, like, low light of her life,
the lowest,
like, something that she probably doesn't even want to think about.
And because a lot of the times when there are suicides, and even, you know, in terms of, like, cases that we've spoken about where mothers do take the kids' lives in murder suicides, people are like, you know, you never know what someone's going through. You know, it's not like, you know, there's general comments that are made surrounding suicides, but the most comments I've seen in this is like, this is crazy. Like, she could have just taken a life anywhere else. She didn't have to do it in this situation at the daughter's event. Like, it's just, it's,
I'm just so curious about, like,
yeah.
Was she, like, planning this? Yeah. Does she have, like, a strained relationship with this daughter? What was the morning like leading up to this? Did they have, like, any idea? Was there any other drama?
And the other thing is, too, so the family are from Georgia. This happened in Ohio. So they traveled to another state to attend the commencement. It's, like, it's just crazy. It's just unbelievable that it would happen.
Yeah, it's horrible. And I'm sure we won't find out anything else unless the family feels like talking more about it. But I mean, I wouldn't blame them for not wanting to talk about it at all.
Yeah, I agree.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
All right, so that's it for this episode about moms, but that's it. We're back on our schedule. So there's a blog on this at truecrimesocietyblog.com if you want to read more about the cases. You can follow us on Instagram at True Crime Society, where we post lots of the current updates and follow all the cases going on. And if you want to follow our personal accounts, mine is stephsum_Olivia's TCS Olivia. We are also on Patreon if you want more content. We do weekly bonus episodes. Like, we just recorded one that was literally like an hour long, so
we get
just
a like a whole other
episode. Yeah, we chat a little bit more about personal things on there sometimes. So that is there, and then we do all the regular episodes get released like the day before, earlier, and without ads. So if you don't want to hear ads, check us out over there. And if you want more episodes to listen to, just search True Crime Society on Patreon. We have some fun group chats and stuff too. Otherwise, share the podcast to your Instagram stories. Big help to us. If you can get the word out, get us some more listeners. Always big help. And nice reviews, nice comments, nice things only. All that.
Good vibes only.
Yeah, please. Good vibes only. And that's it. Thank you guys for listening. Stay safe out there. Peace out.
See ya.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.